It's finally got to the point.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of aspects to our business. We do inspections and metering, and we do street utilities, so transformers and power poles and stuff like that. Business has grown over the last, well, it's exploded over the last 5 years. So now all I do is answer questions. That's quite crazy.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm going to run through a couple of questions and I'll direct them maybe to one person. If anyone else wants to add anything, they can. So I'm going to start over this side first, Natalie. You, obviously, we're Christians first. Have you experienced any miracles in your business?
So most recent one is this week. I had to, you know, doing reviews with staff and things, and you know, one of them said that I want to keep her. She's fantastic. She's been with me since the get-go when I started the business 8 years ago, and she said she really wanted some horticulture clients, some more horticulture clients, because that's what she really enjoys. And so I was quite sleepless on Wednesday night, which isn't like me, and, you know, I was just praying and lying there praying, and I just said, you know, God, you know, she'd bring me some horticulture clients. And by Friday, we had two calls from very specific horticulture clients, who, one of which would be a dream to get. We're meeting them tomorrow morning, and it is a total miracle. These things just happen all the time, and you know, I don't think my staff definitely aren't Christian. I will tell them that, by the way. They do think I'm mad most of the time, but that's okay, because, you know, it's a journey. And so I had another, actually a client who had a mother, has a mother in the UK, very elderly. Mother had COVID, and she was rushing over there, didn't look good and so on. And I just thought, no, I don't care what she thinks of me. I'm going to text her, and I don't even know her that well. But I just said, I'm praying for your mother full and perfect recovery, and that, and, you know, I believe it was a miracle. She was gone, she got there, her mother fully recovered, she came back. And I mean, I claim all of these things entirely as miracles. So,
yeah.
And it happens, I think, all the time, if you're willing to put yourself out there and wear your heart on your sleeve and just be vulnerable. So, yeah.
Tony, Sarah, or Chris, anyone want to add to that? Miracles in your business.
I'll go the other way.
Yep.
So when we had our service stations, we had them for 10 years, very successful business, but I had no passion for it. I sort of ran out of passion for doing that, and started on a course with foodstuffs, looking at supermarkets, and we were relatively new Christians at the time, and I prayed a lot about this. So I'd seen supermarket owners do next to nothing, get paid well, and have great businesses. And I said, look, I'll have so much time available for you if we get this, but let me know whether this is the door to open or the door that stays closed. And look, the process took a couple of years. I got to this stage where God said, look, I think you're closing this door. Lord, I'll keep doing this other business with you. And then the door was wide open. It was really a God thing. We got a supermarket. It was such a blessing. All these things I could do for God because I'd have this time. It was the complete opposite. It was the absolute opposite. We had never been so busy in our lives. We had never had to pay so much money into a business in our lives. And we had our first supermarket for 5 years, and we lost it all. We had spent $3 million modernising the store that had been neglected for decades, and it never got the sales to pay that back. We lost it all. I saw it as a time. This is a great time to reject God. This is a great time to be bitter. But, you know, that moment of truth told me that no way, I love God. This is a teaching. This has been prepared for something in the future. This is maybe my children being prepared to see this with us, who'd seen us, you know, hugely successful up to that stage. So, you know, God's got, you know, I've still got questions to ask God, and you know, in the next life he'll answer some of those for me. But it's you know, it's not always a road to success with business, and you know, God took us down this road. And this road has tested us for a while, and then fortunately things have bounced back. But you know, you have to be, you always have to follow God. You have to trust Him, and you have great responsibility when you're running staff. And may go to the next question. That you know, here's my CEO. I answered.
Awesome. Yeah, that is great. Chris, just in your own right, really successful businessman. What would you say has contributed the most to your success? If you had to just simplify it.
Probably my wife.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And in what way? Can you elaborate
that? Well, good sounding board. Yeah. Obviously, you put a whole lot of prayer in it, put a whole lot of effort into it, and you're stressing yourself out. You're thinking, am I hearing from God, everything else? But, yeah, without that, in the back corner, certainly, well, for me, it was awesome. The right pillar.
Yeah. Tony, I'm sorry. I want to answer that question as well.
Next question.
Anyone else? Yeah. What would you say has contributed the most to your success in business? Or your network? Anyone go for it. Put it out there.
Yeah, so, you know, when you're in business, finances are important. You're always looking at your bottom line. You've got your KPIs, ROI and some and others. For me, that is EROI. It's internal return on investment, because your business and your life has to give something internally, doesn't it? Mm. Part of that is we donate quite a bit through our business. There's a church or a Christian charity comes to me, I'll never say no, I'll always help. I do that for non-Christian charities as well. But, you know, we have a plan in our life. There's a time where we want to retire. We've got a magic figure in mind. That will be it. You know, I don't intend to be working all my life. I want to give more time to God. But what I've arranged with God, the plan I have with my bucket list, if you like, is that once we've reached that figure, we're going to keep working and everything goes to God. So we're going to do it for a year. We're going to do it for a year. And I just have this belief and confidence that it will be my most pleasurable year in life, because it won't just be the money that goes to me, it's the heart, it's everything that will go to him. And I think that will make me a better employer, a better leader in my store. And who knows, it could be more than a year. But it's about the eternal return on investment. And that's really important to me and Sarah, and that's what we've committed.
Yeah. Awesome. Obviously, a lot of people in business are together as couples, maybe in the business, but not always together. Maybe it's sort of like Chris and Lisa doesn't work with him, and she's a good sounding board. But Tony and Sari, you guys work together daily. Now I'm going to ask Sari to go first. How does that work? What are the things people should avoid? We'll send you on a romantic getaway tonight to fix it. Say what you want to say.
There is no illusion. No. I have been brought up my entire life in that environment. My parents are orchardists and have worked side by side together their entire life since I was born. So I have witnessed that, and pretty much even before Tony and I got married, we were working together.
Wow.
When we met in the bank. So as I said, he had to train me, and then as we progressed in the bank, we were even in the same departments and stuff like that. So buying a business together kind of seemed like the natural progression, and we've grown and developed that as years to come. How do we do it without divorce? Pretty much we keep to our own areas of strength. So Tony is very good with staff and HR, and he does all the employment personally. We have 130 staff, and Tony has single-handedly employed every single one of them. It's his skill. He has an ability to be able to read people really, really well. And, credit due. We have a really, really low rate of people leaving us in the industry. It's an industry where people come and go on a really regular basis. And even with the petrol stations prior to that, we had a really low staff turnover as well. So my strength is finance and in the office. So I run the office. Tony has absolutely zero to do with the money. He wouldn't have a clue even how to access the bank account. He obviously reads all the financial accounts and understands all that side of things. But I run that on a day-to-day basis. I also run a department in the store. I run the seafood department, and essentially any other bits and bobs that need to be done that requires a management role, but Tony doesn't want to be a part of. Essentially for us, it works in essentially keeping our roles very separate, keeping to our own strengths, and we try to keep talking business at home to a very limited conversation. Yeah, unless it's something that we don't want to be talking about at work. Yeah. You know, it's more private. But
so that leads me to my next question. You're all married. You all have children. Yeah. So maybe you don't have too many children at home anymore. How do you find that magic word balance? You just mentioned you're trying not to talk about it at home, but are there some other things? But I want to ask all of you this. So are there any other things that you feel are key about that balance with children, married life, business, home life? Who wants to go first?
Our business is good for that because we can have slave labour, just get kids to come to work. And that's exactly what happened during lockdown. So our daughter came back from university, worked in the store. Our son stopped school, worked in the store because we needed people to work in the store. Hopefully gives them some life lessons as well. Nothing comes easy. You work hard for it. Hopefully you work smart for it too. The balance doesn't work on all the time. I missed church last Sunday because I'm spending a lot of time building a dashboard for my buyers team to work on. That's not necessarily the right thing, you know, but it's just honesty. I just sometimes overwork myself and don't balance my life properly and certainly don't give to God first, particularly on Sunday morning, which is obviously what we should do. So it's a work in progress.
As long as it doesn't become a habit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's always a swing, ebbs and...
Yeah, it's not a Monday to Friday, but it's not 9 hours anyway. Yeah, and you've got to find balance.
Chris? Yeah, balance.
It swings all the time, eh?
Yeah.
You're either way too committed, then you realise, I'm way too committed, then you're not, and then you are. But then with the family, also, me and Lisa tag team quite a bit with the kids and stuff like that, you know, it's like, when I'm busy, she's quite often not, and quite often the other way around, so it seems to... I don't know, unplanned work.
Natalie, you must be a good juggler.
No, I definitely call it the struggle of the juggle. I sort of don't believe in balance. I don't think you get anything if you balance, because I don't believe, this is just personal, I don't believe that's how I'm meant to live. I don't believe that things are meant to be comfortable. I believe that it's meant to be painful sometimes. And don't get me wrong, like, you know, this year it's been painful in different ways, and so then you can get angry or bitter, and then you have to deal with that. But when you can get over that, it's really good, and you can move ahead in a different way. You know, I think you have to smell the dirt. It's what someone said to me a while ago, and it's like, it's not nice smelling the dirt. When you smell the dirt, you get better. So, we don't have any balance. I don't remember ever having any balance in 16 years since I've been in New Zealand. So. I don't know whether that's wrong or not.
And maybe we're using the wrong word. What I'm saying is, what would you as a business person and a mom and a parent do to make sure in 15 years you've got a successful business and a successful family? Maybe that's a better way to ask the question than finding a balance. Mm-hmm. I've seen Simon with the kids. I've seen what he does. So what are they?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the kids we do, we do what we can do. But I actually, if I'm being really honest, I think they come on the journey with us. I don't actually, I don't know, I was reading something about Parisian life, where the kids come along with you. You know, you don't actually centre your life around your children. I'm not saying that's right. That may be entirely wrong, but, you know, I should probably be in the parenting quadrant.
We've recorded it.
Yeah. I sort of feel like they've come and they've come into our lives and we have literally dragged them along with us. Mm-hmm. And they come late night things, they come to public events with us, and often they don't like it, but they're growing to like it. And I think all of those experiences, even if it is difficult for them, and they don't want to be on the street corner meeting with Dad today, which is what we'd be doing otherwise, but it's sort of just tough because that's our family and that's what we feel is our assignment. So it's not that we neglect them, but they do have to come into our lives and not the other way around. Yeah.
I agree with Natalia. I mean, I started working at the ripe old age of 4,
wow,
standing behind a pecking stand picking
wow
apples. So, and I got literally
yeah
brought up that way, always working. So,
yeah.
And our kids, you know, I've all got photos of them putting groceries on a shelf at, you know, 6 and, you know, 7. So, yeah, they've just come along for the ride.
Yeah.
And hopefully one day they're just about adults, you know. And, you know, hopefully... Sometimes you wonder, but you've installed some good work ethic in them, and they'll be successful in their own right one day because of, you know, that, you know, they've just been made to put up, shut up, and get on with it. Yeah. It's not to say they haven't had plenty of love, plenty of lovely holidays,
yeah,
and plenty of mum and dad time as well.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Anything else? Good.
I think just the nature of our business and jobs is that we're goal setters, and you know, we teachers and coaches to our staff, and that resonates with our kids as well. So, you know, I suppose we bring them through our life together, because it's all our lives, but we bring it through as a family, and we're very conscious of how we parent while we're busy. Very conscious of that, yeah. Doesn't mean we get it right. But only when we don't, yeah.
So I've got two more main questions I want to ask, and there's lots of people here. Please, that number, just text the question to it. If you don't, we're going to open the floor for you on the spot. So two questions quickly. One of them then that I want to just ask all of you to answer this. They may be real different. How did you, I'm not sure of the position of everyone yet. How did you start your business and get into it? You already mentioned you've changed a few times, but just we'll go around it quickly again. How did you get into it? If someone's here thinking, man, I want to go into business, what do I do? Where do you reckon they start? How did you start yours? Where did they start?
Oh, I got backed into a corner, eh?
You want to go first? You got backed into a corner.
I had nowhere else to go, nothing else to
yeah
do. Looked around and thought, man, I don't want to be a sparky. There's too many of those chicken
yeah
one-man bands out there. So had a bit of training. We'd done this inspection thing and then started. It was the September before the recession, so
wow,
perfect timing. And I remember getting out there and look, I set up office in the laundry and... maybe had 3 jobs a week. Like a job was only 2 hours.
Yeah.
So that's heaps to support a family and
yeah
yeah, backed into a corner. Really.
So how long were you at Sparky?
Sparky for about 10 years, I suppose. Maybe
okay
a little bit less.
So in simplest form, you saw an opportunity.
Not really. So started as a Sparky, ended up going to Australia, did some work over there, came back, got into electrical wholesaling. Again,
okay,
when we came back, we had another look and saw,
yeah,
yeah, don't want to be a sparky over here, there's too many there. So I got into the wholesaling thinking, oh, yeah, this would be cool, I'll be a sales rep, sweet,
yeah,
everybody else got a credit card, and
yeah
spend some money. Had an opportunity, went into partnership with another inspector in town, and
yeah
we doubled that business in 12 months.
Awesome.
Then it was sort of like burnout material, so, yeah, probably better we're in separate ways. And then again, it was, well, what do we do? Well, now I've got the skill, let's get out there, and, yeah.
Awesome.
Again, backed into a corner.
Next one. Next step.
Yeah.
Where's to go next?
So I did 13 years in banking, and in my final years, I probably had the most interesting work. I worked in financial markets, selling securitisation to the Northern Hemisphere, but that meant working all day and then working all night because that's when the Northern Hemisphere are open.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got sick of earning a lot of money for a corporate. Just got sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we also made some life changes. Wanted to start a family, so I wanted to do that back in Hawke's Bay where our family is. And there wasn't those types of jobs for us. So we just backed ourselves and jumped at running our own business. It was a franchise business, so you have some protections. And after 2 years, I said, I'm never working for anybody again.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Your story will be half the same?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah. I mean, how we got into it, essentially, we just got the Hawke's Bay Today newspaper sent to us in Wellington, and there was an ad in the paper.
Wow.
We applied, one of 60 applicants.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Well, I was doing my dream job in Auckland, so I used to leave here on a Monday, leave Simon, come back Friday night, doing editing Simply You and Simply Living magazines in Auckland, which was amazing. When, you know, I was travelling, doing fashion shoots around the world and everything, it was just all wonderful. And then when I started that over 5 years, Simon was a lawyer here, but then he became MP for Tauranga. So after 5 years of commute, smashed my car on the motorway, had two dogs in the car who pooed all over me in fright. And I'm standing on the side of the motorway with these two pooey dogs, actually in my pyjamas as well. I used to go really early and drive to my apartment, get changed and then go to work. I just thought, I think this is a sign. I need to move on, and policeman came and rescued me and all that. Anyway, not too long after that, I handed my notice and came back here, and we sort of knew that we wanted to, we'd been married 7 years, we sort of wanted to have children, and got back here. I just didn't know what I was going to do, because I'd done a lot of the journalism jobs here, like I'd worked at Bay plenty of times, I worked at the Radio Live. I just thought, and it was actually Simon was really encouraging me. He said, "What have you got to lose? Just go for it. Just start, you know." And I think God gives you that boldness, because it is that kind, caring father, isn't it? You know, we're so privileged because we have an ability to take risks. I think that others don't, because we've got him and he's got our backs. Yeah. And so I did that, and it just went from there. Just got one client, got another one, had the ability to take on Alison, who's still with me, and we just grew from there.
Awesome. Mm. So it sort of leads me a little bit to my next question. How do you think you've done business different because you're a Christian? You mentioned praying about stuff.
It was someone once said here during a sermon, might be new, that, you know, you go into your office and pray and ask for the Holy Spirit to be there, you know, and I do that. As I say, none of them have ever been Christians, but I guess I'm totally open about that. And when I think things have happened because of prayer, I let them know. Mm-hmm. And often I think I've just stayed afloat, to be honest, because of that. I think as well, it's that no limits. I think I am really ambitious for I try and surround myself by people who are better than me, but then I'm really ambitious for them. And even if they don't know it, I believe that they can be really great. And again, I think that's a God thing, you know, it's that trying to nurture. And I think that's the biggest kick. Well, my whole thing is a service industry. We're there to make our clients better and greater. And I also believe that for my team, you know. So maybe those things, yeah. But for me, there's no separation with Christianity and believing in the Lord, because I'm there to push into the secular world. I'm not there to push into a Christian world, because they're all good. Yeah.
And the rest of you? Being a Christian, what difference does it make in your business? What has changed?
I'll just take up that point from Natalie. So, you know, one of the mistakes I made when I started in our first supermarket and become a relatively new Christian is I started employing all the people from a church. They needed work. They needed work. I thought, let's help them out. It was a disaster. It was a complete disaster. You know, I have not had a good strike rate having Christians as workers.
Good intention.
And look, there's different reasons for it. I don't want to generalise. But, you know, that was the wrong strategy, because, you know, as Christians, we're going to bring salt and light into non-Christians. And the best place is our workplace. We work with them side by side. So I'll fix that strategy now. We've got a far better one, far better workforce because of it.
But some of our staff are Christians.
Oh, 100%. So, it would probably reflective of of the community. We've got 26 in our store as well.
Yeah.
Great people.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, as the employer, I put it on me that, you know, I have to reflect God's values and grace. And with that comes rules as well. So, you know, rules are our boundaries. And, you know, I put one in the other day. I had my two guys, not looking at porn, but some naked photos from Tinder or whatever on their cell phones in the staff room. There's a new rule now, that's serious misconduct. You know, you don't bring that sort of objectionable material to work. A lot of workplaces won't do that, but, you know, we have to have those rules that go with it. But, you know, I've had staff steal from me. I've brought them back and given them an interest-free loan to pay it back. You know, we're trying to forgive and redeem as well, right? So, you know, you need to reflect God's values and grace.
Yeah, I'll just reiterate that. Our staff, well, half of them are Christians, half of them are not, but that's not the reason we employ them either. But and then just probably our biggest one is just our intention of giving and just getting that right as well. Find that, the staff know that we support, you know, a school over in Africa and bits and pieces like that, and they can see other bits of the business that are going on, and that we come up to the church and what's going on, and just really reflecting what's our Christian walk, but still at work as well.
Awesome. Well, Guru's got some questions quickly. I want to finish off with anyone. Fire away, it's your chance. Go with it. Yep.
My question really is about employing people. How do you find out which people are actually good? Because I've employed people, and honestly, it's been my hardest thing to do. I do immigration, and I've got an immigration consultancy, but finding people that's actually committed and loyal and actually do the job and not around is actually quite hard for me. So just want to know, how do you actually find those people that's pretty good for the business?
Tony, your wife said you're good at it.
So I suppose it's an art, not a science. But look, for me, when I interview, I spend the first 15 minutes or 10, 15 minutes on what they think are icebreaker questions, but that's the interview. The rest of it, I don't even think too much about. That's when we talk about their work careers and things like that. I want to find out about them. I want to find out about their character. I want to find out about how social their life is. So I want to find out about who's at home and things like that. So I try to get a whole lot of substance on that person because I can train the rest. You know, different workplaces, different people, different requirements. But that's how I approach it. You know, reference checks and things like that are gold. I don't employ a single student without looking at their school reports because the teachers are very blunt in their comments. Eh? So no 16-year-old can interview well, but the school report will be the interview for them.
Chris or
Nick? Yeah, our industry is pretty tight, pretty unique. So everybody sort of knows everybody, and you know, you get to hear who's who in the zoo, I suppose, really. But and again, sitting down, I'll do the same. Just those, find out about the person, just what their upbringing is, you know, or how many kids you got and all that, and how do you treat this, and how do you just really dig into that. And you know, you can do that on a conversational level and get right into, and you get a real good feel of where they're coming from and what they're finding out their worth ethic. If they've got that and they want to learn or want to do it, then half the battle's done, you know.
When you're starting out,
so one more thing. Stop. Any of you want to say about stop?
I pray for God to send people to me. And I've actually prayed for certain individuals to apply, and they've applied. I would say that's the number one. And then I'd say you're totally right, is have all my interviews are just, they always say the people I employ is sort of weird, because I'll take them for a coffee and into a situation where they completely disarm, and they think I'm this rambling woman who doesn't know how to do interviews, and I don't, but all I want to do is I want to get you. I want to see it you, who you are. And because on paper you can see if they've got the qualifications and stuff, but you want them to just let go and to show you they are.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, when you're starting out, I imagine it's quite hectic trying to employ staff and then getting the work. And for us, it's horticulture, it's avocados. So if we're employing people, we need to go out and get the work work's not always there, so you're always rushing around Saturdays, Sundays. How do you maintain self-care in the early stages of a business?
Are we going to say you don't?
Yeah, I'm going to say you don't.
Sorry, go
for it. I mean, I look back in those young days, and we were young, but, I mean, it was nuts. Yep. But, you know, we just did not stop. And the petrol stations are a 24/7 business. They never shut, even Christmas Day. You know, Tony's getting phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning with the police armed robbery. And out of, you know, somebody's turned up for their graveyard shift in the car, off he goes, does a graveyard shift. You know, it's relentless, you just don't stop, you know. And then you add a young family into that mix, and it's like, well, I can't go, you got to go, kind of thing. And it's one thing after another, and you literally, yeah, you've just got to fight fires initially. It's probably not what you want to hear.
No, you've got to move. You can be reactive, but then ultimately you need to be proactive to get the solution. So, you know, you stop spinning the wheel like the mouse, and you get off it, and you say, okay, this is what I need to fix this problem.
Yeah.
And then you go about doing that.
Chris?
It's nuts. And what I sort of, you've got to learn to delegate, or if you can get to that point. Sort of looking at, what am I doing? What am I doing all the time? How the heck can I bundle this, and this together? Would that make an 8-hour day for someone? Sweet, or a 6-hour day? Sweet, cool, that's great. Get someone, find someone that's going to be able to do that, get it off your plate, and then just, it's the only...
I think, I started my business, the biggest stress was employing the first person. I did it, and I thought, why didn't I do it sooner?
Yeah, and having that trust and faith in that person that they're going to be there when you need them to be.
So maybe you can answer, how long does the season last?
The other analogy I've always had is, like, to be able to lead the team and stuff, you've got to get your head out of the trench. You know, you're in a battle, you're down there, you're working, and you're in it, and you're on the ground, you hear the term, work on your business, not in your business, but you're out there and you're on the tools and you're working, but it all falls over because you can't get up to see what's ahead to be able to then lead the team and get stuff lined up for them to do. If you can delegate the work and get them to load the work on them, get them to do the work, you can do the planning, and you can lead the team through.
So I'm going to ask them one question, and then we're going to do another question while they think about the answer. What is one regret you have that you wouldn't do again, or one thing you would do different? Okay, is there another question quickly? We've got time.
How do you ensure that strategies or decisions that you make, like building $1 million, you know, building out the lakes or buying a business or whatever, is aligned with God's plan for your business? You know, what strategies have you got in place?
I thought our first supermarket was aligned with God until we lost everything doing it. But it is aligned with God. That's, you just have to, you know, like we don't operate our business without Him. We are forever going to the Lord asking for God, what do we do here? What do we do here? And yeah, absolutely. We pray for finding great recruits and things like that, and so on. So I don't know. We have to trust in Jesus. I pray constantly. I used to start my day at work in my office praying. That stopped at work because I had so many interruptions. As soon as I arrived, everybody wants to come and see me. So now I do the 25-minute car ride to work, and that's prayer time. So I stopped praying, because it was about, God says pray for everything, come to me for everything. So I kept praying for all these successes in my business, but I stopped praying for that stuff. I said, let me represent you in this business, and the rest will come. Just let me be you in this store, reflect you, be a disciple of yours, and for my staff to see it. That's what I pray for these days in different ways.
Chris, I think you had a building there.
Well, you've still got a plan to be going forward and doing something. If you're not growing, you're dead, right? So, yeah, cool. We've got to, I suppose for us, it was like, well, when the 18 cars turned up at the house next door for a health and safety meeting, might have to change this. But it took us 12 months to find a place, find a section, and then it took us another 12 months to build the jumping plane. So,
step of faith.
Step, you just got to do it.
Believe in your vehicle.
Yep. There was the twitch.
I suppose I just see it as an unfolding part. So opportunities present themselves that are meant to be there. And if you're pushing too hard for something that's not happening, it's probably not of God. So I guess it's that. Also, this year, you know, I think, I don't want to talk, but speak for Simon, but one of the things I think that we're really learning to do truly is to try and surrender, because I think we thought we were, but we weren't. And again, it's that whole smell the dirt, you know. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to have to be pushed into the dirt. You want to do it of your own will. But sometimes that doesn't happen because, you know, you're sort of very flawed. But it's that, and it's trying to work out, let things come as well. You know, things, it's amazing, I think, that, you know, what you're presented with in life and just being able to spot those things rather than pushing down a track all the time that is your human track. You know, you've got, I sort of see it as two tracks. You've got your human track, with your wants, desires, and your ambitions, and then you've got your spiritual track, and it's just trying to stay on that spiritual track rather than the other.
Yeah. Awesome. Any last quick question before we find out the one thing they're going to do different or one regret they have? We're all happy. Okay, we'll just start on that side, Chris. What's one thing you'll do different or one regret you have? Be a gold nugget for someone yet. Is there anyone who's ready? Natalie's ready. Go, Natalie.
In the human, because I don't, yeah, in the human, I thought that having more people on board, because we, if you're looking at it, you know, simply, we sell time. So I thought having more people on board meant a more successful business. But it didn't. It actually meant that it was a struggle to pay everybody. It's a bizarre sort of tipping point in your business. People have told me this, but I just thought, no. We ended up with 12 in the business. There's a team of 12. And so that got very difficult, and it was a grind. And I asked God for help, and naturally people just started to leave, and I didn't re-employ those. And now we're down to a team of 5. And in the human, we're a much more successful business, and everybody gets paid more, and everyone feels more valued. But was that a mistake? I probably not, you know. So yeah.
Who wants to go next?
I don't know if I've got any regrets or anything. Yeah, but for me, maybe that we hadn't, like Tony said, we were only quite young Christians. When we took over petrol stations, we were, yeah. So, but I still believe that was a God thing, getting us back to Hawke's Bay. And both of my brothers were the ones that encouraged us to go to church, and we ended up going to church with one of my brothers. So, you know, he still had his hand, even though we were practicing at that point. So, but that never filtered into our business when we had the petrol stations at all. And, you know, it was a very successful business, as Tony said, and we made a lot of money, and we never gave back any of that at that time. So that's probably a regret, you know.
Yeah. Well, something you'll do different too.
Yeah. Oh, we do now.
You do now. Awesome.
Yeah.
Look, it's just balance of time for me, and it's still attention that stays, and I think I get better and better at it as time goes on, but. Like I said, you know, there's the ROI, there's the eternal return on investment, and that comes from what I'm giving to. So, and I can't connect and partner with God in my business unless I'm doing so, you know, heavily in my life.
Yeah.
So I have to find ways. I mean, being in business, you can put as much time as you like into it. It's endless. Mm, yeah. It's endless. So you know, you've got to draw a line on days and on weeks and on months and years and say, that's it. No, I don't need to do any more. Don't need to. Invest as much more in this. So it's about finding, giving God more of my time outside of my business.
Awesome.
Because we partner well while we're working, and I don't partner as well when I'm not working.
Yeah. Fantastic. Any one thing you'll do, Rick, Chris?
I don't know anything different, so I don't know if I've done it the right way or the wrong way. Probably the one thing would be, so going from like a small team to, you know, we've got a bigger team, that bit in the middle, that is harsh. Eh? Just get through that as fast as you can. Or get out. It is not the place to be.
Yeah.
Hey, that's fantastic. I might ask you guys if you want to hang around for a minute or two if anyone has questions they didn't want to ask in public.
Yeah.
I want to thank all of them. I want to thank Eddie over here for putting it all together.